Will you be ours? Be our one and only, be our Valentine's, or maybe even Allentine's.
Mm-hmm.
Community Rewatching 101 just misses you, wants to be bask in your presence, and maybe make little moony lovey-dovey eyes at you today, because we are going over Community's Valentine's Day episode, and we got to get in the mood. I don't know how we can get in the mood for Valentine's Day at the end of March, but we're going to try, darn it. We're going to try. Hi, I'm Justin. With me is Heather and Al. And
yo!
Right here. Yo, indeed. So, yeah, Valentine. Did you guys have any interesting Valentine's Day this year?
No, not at all. No. The thing that I have been doing for Valentine's Day every year for probably the past, 2023? 20 years, is getting steak, like really good steak, baked potato, bottle of red wine, something very chocolatey and decadent for dessert, and enjoying it together at home. That's not a bad thing. Wild Valentine's Day stories.
That sounds amazing.
I love it. It's the best. It's so the best that I've done it with both my husbands now. They're both like, this is awesome.
I cannot remember the last time I had a good steak. That sounds so good.
Yeah, like we almost never eat steak. So it's always what I like on my birthday, and I like it for Valentine's Day.
Guys, let's go out right now. Let's ditch the podcast and go get steak.
Let's go get some steak.
Al's going to pay with this big fat salary he's got going on here. So yeah,
steak us up.
Yeah, Al, do you have any Valentine's Day stories or traditions or anything like that?
Well, for years, on Valentine's Day, we would stay in. My wife would cook me my favorite dinner or a dinner of my choosing. And we would lay low, honestly. There was never a big to-do. The last couple of years has been absolutely nothing. I think the last time we actually did anything, we did go to a Valentine's night paint night.
Nice.
That turned out to be in the middle of a blizzard.
Oh.
So this was nice. 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. And yeah, on the way there, my car spun out. I spun around 360 three times in the middle of the road.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
And then we went to the craft store and we painted little lovebirds. So, you know.
Post-traumatic stress disorder for the rest of the night.
Exactly.
Paint the stress away.
My lovebird was a little twitchy.
Oh.
He's seen stuff like you wouldn't believe. Yeah. Well, I mean, this year I came home and my wife had written notes on, like, probably, I kid you not, like 200 different sticky hearts and put them everywhere all over the room.
Nice.
In my office.
Aww.
And it was really cute. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. She's like, yeah, I did this 10 years ago. I said, what?
Oh.
She's like, yeah, I wrote these hearts 10 years ago and then I forgot about them and then I just found them. So I'm doing it now, baby. I'm like, okay, better late than never, right? You know,
I thought you were about to say that she was fussing at you for not remembering that she did it 10 years prior also.
Right.
No.
I thought that's where that was going. So no, I'm glad it wasn't that.
Yeah, it's one of those holidays that it's almost hard to mention it. You know, it's coming up because you don't want to make anybody feel bad if they don't have somebody.
Right.
You never know what the expectations are. Sometimes for people, it's really stressful, even if you are in a relationship. For a lot of people, it's like one of those things we want to just get past. But on the other hand, what else does February have? Not a lot. It's, you know,
freezing cold
Day.
Temperatures, mud, and Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. And Abraham Lincoln, as good looking as that guy is, he just can't give me all the hearts and the bee minds that I need.
Oh, so. And Groundhog Day. So we at least have a Bill Murray movie in there now.
That's true. Well, we are going to cover season 2, episode 15 tonight, early 21st century romanticism. I guess, I don't know. We haven't really graded the titles. Sometimes I think they're very clever. This one I think is just a little wordy.
But, agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Word salad.
Send it back to the writer's room.
I think most of the titles in Community, I find like they evoke nothing for me. You can't tell me, hey, remember early 21st century romanticism? My answer is going to be no.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. There's a few I think are very, very clever, but later on we get a couple of them. But yeah, I agree with you. You can name the titles, and unless it's like cooperative calligraphy, I always remember that's the pen episode. Yeah, I can't really remember a lot of them. The pilot was the pilot. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Yeah.
Points.
So maybe it was a naming convention they should have given up on early on, but you know, oh well. We're going to get into this episode. It has all to do with the Valentine's Day happenings at Greendale and several different subplots, but I'm not going to summarize it for you. One of my co-hosts, who is decidedly super romantic, is going to handle that. So who's the most romantic of the two of you here?
Well, if I do say so myself, I wrote something. How about that?
You're the prepared one, so yeah.
All right, this is a dirty limerick. We don't want to hear it now. You got to class it up here.
All right. Community, Season 2, Episode 14, Early 21st Century Romanticism. Written by Dan Harmon and Carrie Dornetto. Directed by Stephen Sprung. It's Valentine's Day at Greendale once again. And as the cast member involved in a relationship plot this season, Shirley is, well, not really in this one. Oh well. But everyone else is doing stuff. Jeff bails from the group for the evening and watches football with Duncan. Chang crashes the party, and maybe more. Troy and Abed are both interested in the school's hot librarian, who agrees to go as both of their dates to the Valentine's dance, so she can choose which one she would like to see again. In a storyline that has aged perfectly, Britta is spending lots of time with her new lesbian friend, Paige. Paige is spending lots of time with her new lesbian friend, Britta. They aren't gay themselves, but they don't need to be gay to hang out with a gay person. In fact, they're probably freaking out all the close-minded lamos that are watching them because they dare to hang out with a gay person in public. And finally, Pierce is spiraling out of control on painkillers and talking to a miniature Andy Dick. It's sad. But we got magnitude! Pop, pop! All this and more tonight on Community.
Pop, pop!
Fun trivia fact for our show here. When we were originally coming together and kind of batting around some possible names for the show, one of them was the Pop Pop Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's which right. I thought I kind of really wanted that one, even though it was not as descriptive in the title as Community Rewatching was. So
I hated that one right up front. But honestly, if we had the Pop Pop Podcast, I'd be okay with that now. It's really grown.
Do you think
on
it would cause a little confusion, though? Would people think it's supposed to be a podcast about grandfathers?
Mm. Oh, I was thinking like the cereal, like Kellogg's
the Pop
Pops.
Pop Podcast.
Maybe we can get sponsored by Orville Redenbacher.
Hey.
Yeah. Okay, so we need some steak. We need some popcorn. Mm-hmm. We need some cereal. And apparently we need a grandfather. And then we'll be set to go for tonight.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a very sitcom-y episode in that we've got all these kind of different subplots going on. None of them are really an A story. They are just a story, and that's kind of happening.
Yeah.
So all loosely around the theme of Valentine's Day, although I think it's kind of interesting that Jeff's story takes place completely removed from everybody else. And all of the rest of the study group, it's mostly around the dance, which we don't even see the dean. How? Come on. Dean has been absent for way too many episodes now.
It's offensive, really.
It really is. But we get a lot of side characters in this episode, so I'm not going to complain too much. So how do you guys want to tackle this? Do you want to just kind of divvy it up on the subplots and go one at a time? Or do you want to go chronologically through the episode?
Ooh, I didn't know I was going to get choices tonight.
Yeah, all these choices.
I wasn't prepared.
I feel like the episode pops around so much, not to make that word mean, mm-hmm. lose all meaning, but why don't we go subplot by subplot? I feel like that probably makes the most sense.
Yeah.
I concur. All right, well then let's start with Troy and Abed's, because that's the very first one we see in the episode as they are scoping out librarian Mariah, who is played by Mate Schwartz, and who is wearing a very nice outfit, let's just say. Yeah. They,
she pulls off her role well as hot librarian.
Yeah, you got to have the glasses, right?
Yeah, and, yeah.
Why does being a librarian make her even hotter, Troy says. And Abed, I love this reply. He's like, she is the keeper of knowledge and holds all the answers to our questions. Like, will you marry me? And why are there still libraries? He's given it a lot of thought, this Abed of ours. But yes, they are both in love at a distance with the librarian there that we have never seen before and never will again.
I was about to say, did I miss something where they mentioned that she's new to the school? I'm like, who is this lady?
Nope, just kind of there.
Just there. All right.
I love that they randomly call out books to try and get her attention.
and then fall asleep.
Notices them, they go to sleep.
I need that. I need that as a ringtone. Just Abed going, books! Pretend you're asleep. Oh, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful. That's our go-to. I like Troy's line here. I want to be a book so she could pick me up, flip me through my pages, make sure nobody draws wieners in me. He's thought about that a little too much, too. He's good on the metaphor front.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah, Jeff, of course, Jeff comes in and they have to ask him his thought because they're both two guys, two best friends in love with the same girl they've never really talked to, just shouted at from afar. And Jeff, great Jeff line. I don't believe in dibs or love at first sight or love or best friends or doing things, but it's good you brought this to me. And Abed's like, open your heart, Jeff. Open your heart.
That's a great, great Jeff line.
It is. That's. I was just watching, believe it or not, you might believe it, the pilot episode of the 1995 failed sitcom Clerks, as based off the movie that nobody's seen. There was a show, they did a test pilot, and it had Jim Brewer from SNL as Randall.
That's a good choice, actually. It would have been horrible, but I can see the logic.
He was fun in like one scene. He really let loose and was kind of just Jim Brewer. And it was the whole thing was just, it was bad. It was, you know, no jokes, but so many of the scenes that they had to kind of shove exposition into the voice, you know, like, let me now tell you my character's backstory, you know, and very awkward dialogue. And when I hear quotes like this in Community, I'm like, man, if I had never seen an episode of the show before, Jeff coming in and giving that line would have told me tons about his character. He's cocky. He doesn't really, you know, he's not really that romantic. He doesn't really believe in all these things his friends do. But he's also very, like, he acknowledges that about himself. And he's okay with it. Like, that's a great way to tell me about your character without telling me about your character. And, yeah, sitcom writers could learn a thing or two about from Community, I think.
Also, it shows you that he has biting sarcasm.
Yeah, that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like how then Pierce or Jeff sees Pierce come in being grumpy. He's like, all right, opening my heart's on the list. We'll push Jeff off to the side because we'll talk about Jeff a little bit here. So, yeah, we'll stay on Troy and Abed here because they all break up to go do their separate things. So Troy and Abed ask Mariah out. So what did you guys think of Mariah, the librarian with the big glasses?
She's pretty.
Yep. I think that summarizes a lot of it. I think in the scene where they ask her out, I think she is, you know, she's very cute and very, I don't know, she's kind of, she's got the perfect girl thing going on. And then by the end of the subplot, when he gets to the end of the dance, she's changed almost kind of, it's not subtle, but she's changed just enough to be like, oh, no, I don't want to be around this person.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I had the same thought. Like, she's kind of quirky, which is really what Troy and Abed need. They need somebody who's a little weird like them, a little, you know, going to appreciate their quirk. But yeah, by the end of the episode, she's just generic pretty girl who needs to kind of get shoved out of the scene so that the plot can resolve itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a shame. Like, I would have liked to see her go out on a bit of a higher note than that. But
yeah, you know, I think that it's the real story of this whole plot is that Troy and Abed, you know, are each other's perfect Valentines, and that's kind of it. You know, that there's no one that's going to come between them. And maybe there was a way to do that that didn't suddenly cast her as slightly villainous, or, you know, just now that everyone's gone, let's talk about how weird Abed is. But this is my favorite plot in the episode, honestly. I think it really showcases that Troy and Abed are each other's Valentines. They're their forever Valentines. And I like that.
Yeah.
And if it comes at the expense of her, then okay.
I mean, the way she pulls off that line, she says, "This is the cutest thing that's ever happened to me." And the way she's doing that is just, yeah, that's awesome. Like, she has potential. And then she has, you know, some good, and the way that they high five each other without even looking, like they're still looking at her, but they just high five in that moment. It's like they have practiced this line. They have practiced this approach. So they both decide that they're going to take her simultaneously to the dance, and they'll let her choose who gets the second date, which, you know, hey, kind of works out. One of them's going to be happy. She gets two dates out of the process. But what she doesn't get is what's in the briefcase.
Forgot about that.
She's like, what's in the briefcase? Tacos? You want one? No. Oh, and you can see their relief. Like, we were going to eat them later. Abed's like, yeah. I have so many questions about the tacos. Okay. One, did they get it from the cafeteria? Are they just hauling them around for the rest of the day? Are they day-old tacos? Are they arranged in a way in the briefcase that they're going to, like, collide with each other? Because he's holding it kind of vertical there. Or is there a special taco holder?
Are they complete tacos, or are they taco fixings that they're going to fix for them themselves?
Yeah. Or is this like you just went to Taco Bell and they're already wrapped and you just threw a ton of wrapped tacos in there? Soft shell, hard shell? The cool new hard shell that can stand up on a table?
Ooh. I like to think that they decided that this is like a business transaction, so we need to look like businessmen, so we need a briefcase.
Yes.
What are we going to put in the briefcase? Can't be empty. And
might as well bring a snack.
Yep. The next thing someone said was tacos.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't this Troy's official briefcase that he had the neck pillow the last time? Or the pillow?
Oh, that's a good question.
Like, we gotta make sure. I'm going to do some research. Is how many times do we see the briefcase? Because I think it does come out to play in the Pulp Fiction episode.
Naturally.
But yeah. Okay, so maybe this is Troy's special business briefcase. I like that you put it that way. That's cool. So yeah, they both take her out. They get to the dance, and we're kind of flash forwarding a little bit here because Abed has just finished 2 hours of analyzing the Saw movie franchise.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Abed, aren't there better things for you to analyze than Saw? I mean, was Saw really that? Was that like the height of Saw popularity, 2010?
Maybe.
Was everybody talking about Saw back then, you know, as a franchise? Like, people go see it, but.
Couldn't have been the height, because I think the main hype, the height of it was like the first two, maybe three. Yes.
Saw was 2004, Saw 2 was 2005.
And Troy says that there were 8 movies. So they're already at 8.
Yeah, I've only seen the first one, and then I just went, yeah, I'll tap out. I'll let other people handle this.
Yeah.
Same.
Same. I don't know. It seems not that it's out of character for Abed to overanalyze a movie franchise, but Saw. Like, he's never seemed like a horror movie aficionado, and he's more of a nerdy, geeky kick puncher kind of guy.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting choice for the writers to go with that.
There are certainly more comfortable options that he could have chosen.
Maybe that's a joke that he picked that he's talking about a horror movie franchise to a girl on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't read the room in that.
That makes sense. We also don't know what the context of the speech was. He could have gone on for 20 minutes about everything that's wrong with the Saw franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe. Like
the Farscape conversation from the bar all over again.
Oh, man, I would have so picked him as my date. Absolutely. Would you have? Yeah, I would have. Yeah. Yeah.
He would have been fun.
I know. I mean, fun.
Well, somebody's got to make up for you. I mean, he could definitely, like, bring out the best in Heather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, both of them. I think Troy would have been a lot, as long as Troy didn't kind of backslide into his whole, hey, I'm going to, you know, seduce you kind of thing, where he's just like silly and goofy and making a lot of weird random comments. Like, that would be a lot of fun to hang around with, too. But I think Abed would be more fun. But yeah, Mariah chooses Troy. And Troy is like, Abed's cool. You know, it's like, okay, shakes her hand, takes off, and they start dancing. And Troy is just so not cool with Mariah rejecting Abed. Like, he is affronted.
Mm-hmm. And
I love that that's his top priority is, why didn't you choose my friend? What's wrong with my friend?
Like, yeah.
He's really not self-centered here. He's really concerned about his friend and why his friend got rejected in this way.
Very strange of her to just say, because he's weird. Like, they're clearly such tacos. Close to each other. Yeah, they've got briefcase tacos, first off. Huge indicator of serious friendship, briefcase tacos. Two, he's... clearly, they're so tight that they walked up to you together after discussing with one another and deciding they were okay with approaching you together and having you choose between them. Like, that's how close they are. And then you choose to call the friend of the other one weird. It does not make sense, really, to me, for her to turn that quickly.
Yeah, she says, Troy, I would love to be his friend. And Troy's like, I know, it's incredible. I just love that.
It's but, so, you know, like, wholesome.
It's very wholesome. Like, they just trying to explain Troy and Abed's relationship it's easy to go the route of like, oh, they're Bert and Ernie, or oh, they're, you know, it's a bromance. I mean, and there's elements of truth to both of that. But when I was watching this episode, what really got in my head is like, they really are Calvin and Hobbes. Like, they're like kids. They both of them in their own way are very childlike. Troy, his intellect's very childlike. His perception of the world's very childlike. And Abed, his emotional state is stunted. Mm-hmm. But the two of them together pair well and they have fun. And so that's why they do Troy and Abed in the morning, even though there's no cameras. It's pretend, and that's what kids do. They like to pretend things. And all these great things like making the blanket forts, that's what kids do. And so just kind of looking at them, not really, like, really taking romance off the table, and you can read into this whatever you want to. I'm just saying, for me, I don't really ever think about it that way. I think of it like these are two kids in aging bodies who have found their soulmates, and they're just delighted to hang out with each other. And that's why Troy is really affronted here. This is his bestest friend. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't like that this girl that they both liked likes only one of them and not the other. And that's the end of my speech. But that's what I got from it. I like how Troy just runs out of the room. It's like, I hate her. I hate her.
It's guy love. I don't know all the lyrics.
Yeah, the great moment, too, when Abed's like, Happy Valentine's Day, and they hug, and Troy's like, it is now. Aww. And then just Mariah walks past them.
Just ignore her.
Just ignore her. Such an awkward walk. Anything else you guys want to say about the subplot?
No. Nah, it's just adorable.
Yeah, it is. It's sweet.
All right. Well, let's flip a coin. Let's go with Britta. Yeah.
Oh, Britta.
Annie. And Yeah, so Britta comes in. She's made a new friend. Friend's name is Paige. Apparently, this is the episode where both Britta and Paige dress like it's 1997.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of flannel and vests and hats and
denim.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just getting such a female alt rock vibe from
For sure.
Both of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's really intentional. I mean, they want to sort of have a little affair thing going on because that can very easily read lesbian if you want to attach a style of dress to that, you know? Mm-hmm.
I just miss 80s, or I'm sorry, 90s wear. I always thought it was really cool. Some of it, not all of it. We don't have to rip things up again and wear too much flannel, but there were parts of it I liked.
Oh, it's thoroughly imprinted on me. When Captain Marvel came out a few years ago and it takes place in the 90s, and Carol Danvers goes and just gets dressed in like random 90s clothes.
Floppy top hat, furry hats that everybody was wearing, like Jamiroquai and all the celebrities had. Do we want those back too?
No, I'm not saying universally across the board, but there was, I don't know. It looked like for like 3 years there, girls were comfortable and wearing comfortable clothes.
We had a good little run there for a bit.
So Britta's made friends with a lesbian, and boy, does she want everybody to know it. Mm-hmm. And she wants not just people to know it, but she wants to know how cool she is. And this is, it's a subplot. It's a thing that happens. And so she fields some questions. It's weird how everybody acts completely shocked that there is a gay person on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Annie's reading of A Friend of Ellen.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard somebody say that.
Never
out loud,
heard ever. That.
Ever. But you know what? It does line up a great joke at the beginning. Because when she says that, and then everybody looks at Pierce, and Pierce is like, what? And she's like, well, you've been calling me a lesbian for, you know, 3 years now, 2 years now. Thought you'd have something to say. He's like, nope. But I do have a prepared statement.
Yep. He said not off the cuff, but I do have a prepared statement.
Not off the cuff. Oh, my. And he pulls out, six sheets of paper.
Yeah.
Clears his throat, paragraphs. And then they brilliantly use the opening credits just to break through that. So like last episode, the Dungeons and Dragons episode where, you know, the sound goes out so you can only imagine what was being said. You know, same thing here because we just get the last line. And then he puts it down. He's not ranting. He's not raving. He just looks very satisfied, like he finally has gotten to read this letter to Britta. It's apparently very long, and as Jeff said, many, many paragraphs of that were oddly supportive.
Yeah.
And Pierce says, wait till you hear the one I have for you.
I want to hear
it.
You
know that's going to haunt Jeff's dreams at night.
So that's a beautiful Pierce moment. For whatever else goes on with him in this season and this episode, it is a beautiful Pierce moment.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just... it's not over-the-top cackling evil, just very Piercean. It's good. He also dances his way, moonwalks out of the room. Yeah, but that's his subplot. He's going off to his own subplot, so we're not going to follow that.
Yeah. Do think that this plot is a pretty perfect encapsulation of Britta, that she would be, you know.
Yeah.
It's very important to her that everybody understands that she is friends with a gay person, and it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a big deal. Mm-hmm. But she's going to say it's not.
Right. And of course, it's ridiculous. I think even in 2010 that anybody would be that scandalized by the existence of a gay person. But it is pretty perfect for Britta, even if those specifics are, you know, not.
Well, but it's in line with her character. I think that's something we see a lot in this particular episode. It's not really retreading a lot of new, it's not forging a lot of new ground for the characters. It's really just reinforcing what we already kind of know about them. And for Britta, she wants to be seen as always doing the virtuous thing or the right thing or the self-important, but it's also very tied into her narcissism because she's just as narcissistic as Jeff, just in a different way. Mm-hmm. And she really wants to be seen as important and special. And, you know, this is a way to do that. So, you know, part of the joke is not who this person is, but that she's using what she sees as somebody's special status, their special identity, to prop her up. And that's not really that cool. I mean, it's not, I'm friends with Al. You don't hear me shouting that from the rooftops to make myself seem better. Although it would. Many, many doors would open in my life if they knew I was Al's friend. And I dropped Al's name into every conversation I had with Al. Did you know Al? Yeah, I knew Al before he was cool.
Might land you on a couple of lists, too.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's kind of, but she does this all the time. Like, she was episode two, you know, like, she was like, oh yeah, I used to go to all these protests and I did all this and I did that. And really what it is virtue signaling before we had a phrase for it. Mm-hmm. It's just,
yes,
patting yourself on the back and making yourself look like you're all that in a bag of chips. I just dated myself horribly. I don't
care. Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Annie and Britta's talk about Paige is probably the most uncomfortable scene in the whole episode, just because it's just weird. It's weird. It's homophobic to ask questions, apparently. And Britta just kind of, the way they're having that conversation is so bizarre. But then
Britta's just, she's so high and mighty about it that it is.
She's literally sitting on the edge of the seat instead of the seat itself.
Yeah.
So she's propping herself up. Yeah.
Think about that, yeah.
But we do kind of find out really quickly that kind of set up for the inevitable collision that when Annie's talking to Paige's friend, that they both realize that neither Paige nor Britta is gay. They just think the other person is, and they want to be cool by having friends with somebody who's one. So you can, I don't know the name of the person who's supposed to be Paige's friend.
Yeah, they don't give her a name.
She's just kind of there.
I think if you go into the IMDb, the character does have a name. But
do you think they hired her just based on how big her eyes are alone? Because she has huge eyes.
Yeah, I was trying to decide, is she just supposed to be like parallel universe Annie?
I think so, for sure. Yeah, because I feel like Paige and Britta are the same person.
Right.
So they've got their own Annie.
So Paige and Britta ask each other to the dance, and they go to the dance, and they want to feel like they're more important than they actually are. Like, the second they go in there, everybody's just kind of going and dancing and doing their thing, but they're making speeches and they're holding hands, and they're, you know, like, the way that they do this is, it's kind of funny understanding it from both of their perspectives, that they're sort of being brave, but also, as Al said, they're being sort of really high and mighty. And but they get out there, and I just think I kind of always chuckle a little bit when, like, I feel like everybody's looking at us and, like, nobody's looking at them.
It felt very high school to me. You know, you either had that thing of no one's ever gone through this before ever, or everybody is watching me all the time. You know, most teenagers fall into one or two of those camps. Mm-hmm. And it feels like these two never quite matured past high school. Yeah. And realized nobody cares.
Yeah. Well, they end up kissing while they dance because they kind of dare each other to do that. And at the time, just horrible kiss, by the way.
It's the least sexy kiss. It's beautiful.
Oh, they're like, eyes are looking around.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of think somebody's pointing a gun at them from off screen. that kind of attitude. And then as they're doing that, they find out that they're both straight, and kind of really have a bit of a tiff over this. And both of them feel like they've been wronged by the other, and they're both coming from the same perspective. So that's my I have more than one quibble about this subplot. It's just not as funny as it could be. I guess that's my big quibble. My small one is that Paige seems like she's more offended by Britta. Like,
yeah.
You're the worst. And I'm like, you did the exact same thing. Yeah. How is she the worst? Like, don't storm out. Just get. I did like Britta's like, we're just two human beings in this crazy world or something like that.
Getting all philosophical.
Yeah. I like that it set up this great little comedic moment where Annie's comforting Britta and a guy does call, kiss her! And then for a second, Annie just goes for it. And it's a beautiful moment of physical comedy on Annie's part.
Yeah.
She just... Annie's very suggestible is what I got away from that. But
well, I also wondered if it's the possibility that Annie is possibly bicurious and Britta, because Annie does not conform to her idea of what a lesbian should be, Britta's completely oblivious.
Could be.
Mm. Or am I just reading way too much into it?
Were you the guy calling out Kisser?
I can neither confirm nor deny, it's, but again, did I sound am
kind of familiar.
Yes. Yeah, he had a bad mic. I could tell. Yeah.
I feel like this isn't the first time we've seen Annie show sexual interest in another woman. So I think this may be a running thing. Like maybe you're not crazy, Al. You're not reading too much into it.
Okay. I can't think of specific other things, but I feel like you're right.
I can't think of them either, but I feel like I'm right too. Thank you.
I'm going to sit here and be oblivious.
I feel like I'm right here in the middle between you two. I can't choose.
Stuck in the middle with us.
You're both so smart. I don't have much more to say about this subplot. It doesn't do much for me. I think that it was one of those setups, like the writers thought that they were clever setting it up and they thought would kind of come out as more funny in execution, and it just kind of
I don't think it's a terrible idea, and it's so Britta. It's so very Britta. It's very believable to think that this character would do this, but you're right, it just doesn't hit quite right.
Well, I'm gonna go with Pierce then. So here's something that hits you. We'll rewind all the way to back to the beginning of the scene. I had to pay extra for the special effects on this podcast.
Magical.
So Pierce is popping pills. Say that 5 times fast. The same pills he got when he broke his leg. So how many episodes ago was that at this point? Got some continuity going on here. That even though his wet legs are better, he's still taking these pills. Still seeing Andy Dick for some reason.
Poor guy.
Which means we have to see Andy Dick, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
Nope.
And he doesn't really do anything in this episode. He's just the weird little guy that Pierce talks to and kind of convinces Pierce to keep taking pills.
Yeah, I don't remember our conversation about him from the last time he appeared. Yeah. But I feel like they hired him on the premise that Andy Dick is a funny guy, so let's go let him be funny. And instead, he just showed up and he read the lines in the script.
I never thought he was funny.
Yeah, I never did too. And I think it's one of those cases of real life being uncomfortable when it comes into certain roles, because he was such a notorious drug user.
Mm-hmm.
And, even in news radio, he and John Lovitz were... John Lovitz hated him, punched him off camera at a party once because he truly blamed Andy Dick for giving drugs to
Phil Hartman's wife.
And so, I don't know, separating the artist from the art, it's always a tricky call to make, and you can make that on your own, but I've never liked him. I never liked his style of comedy, and he shows up in something like this. I'm just like, get out of my show. I like this show. Don't sully my show.
I know. And it dates it really hard too. It just dates it even more. Oh gosh. Oh.
I will say I was kind of impressed that when Andy Dick shows up on the drinking fountain, they actually got the reflection under his feet kind of right. Like he was standing there and there was a shiny reflection of him.
I didn't notice that. You know,
special effects guys did something right there. Yeah. So, Pierce is taking a whole lot of pills. And this is where, Shirley gets her only line of the episode when she's a little concerned about Pierce taking a lot of pills and kind of calls it out, but they don't really do much. And Pierce just kind of leaves and then shows up at the dance and is still taking more pills. And at that point, Annie comes over and he yells at Annie really harshly. And so she, Pierce, you go straight to hell. And then she's just like, okay, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and then he overdoses at the end. The end.
Hey.
It's a short subplot. I know, I understand it's like a season-long arc beat that they needed to squeeze in somewhere, but there is zero, other than maybe the moonwalk, zero jokes. Literally. Mm-hmm. There's just no jokes with this. And
yeah.
I don't know. I don't, what do you guys think about this? I'm so underwhelmed by this whole thing.
By this subplot in particular?
Yeah, it's like they needed him to overdose at the end, so they're like, okay, we need to reverse engineer it, so we're just going to have him pop pills a bunch, and I guess we should get Andy Dick back, and that'll be it.
Yeah, he just shuffles off to a park bench or a bench on campus. I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Is it the same bench from Back to the Future that the homeless guy was on when Marty comes back from the future?
Sure. Looks,
yeah, why not?
Sure, yeah.
It's the exact same bench from the back lot of, you know, whatever. I don't know. I mean, it sets up the next episode, which is probably the most important thing to understand here. But if you guys have nothing more to say about it,
yeah, it really got nothing. It's just sort of sad. So it's not funny. And I don't even know. Do you think Chevy Chase is trying to make it funny? Because I'm not convinced he's even trying.
After the first scene, no. Like, what is he really doing? He's just kind of talking to his imaginary friend.
Yeah. Yelled at Annie.
All right, let's talk about Jeff.
All right.
You know, things are getting too down. So let's go to a party. Let's go to the one off-campus party that we're going to get, which I'm going to say, Al, you like the Troy and Abed. This is my favorite subplot right here. I love this Jeff subplot. I think for the first time I watched it, it was so unexpected. You know, Jeff says, you know, I'm just going to go home, watch soccer. And he's talking to Duncan. And Duncan's like, oh, you know, like, oh, you're going to go do something else. He's like, no, I'm a stylish American. I forced myself to watch soccer since 2004. I like that line. That seems so true to not just Jeff's character, but many people that I know that I've seen try very hard to get into soccer because it would make them seem more cool.
Mm.
But the reason he storms out, I guess we should rewind a little bit more back. He storms out of the study room because they get into a fight, Jeff and the study group, over the bare naked ladies.
Yeah.
B&L? Yeah.
How many fights do we need to have over B&L before we realize it's just going to drive our country apart?
I've never heard such impassioned language used concerning B&L. Yeah, that's right. I'm cool. I say the short.
My wife to see B&L a couple years
ago. You did?
It was a good show.
I bet it was.
It's one of her few favorite bands. Like, she doesn't have a lot of bands that she follows. She likes them.
They're good. I like their Christmas album that I'm assuming they only have one of. If they have more, it's the first one. Yeah.
I did look this up. Now, at the same time, they did the theme song to The Big Bang Theory, which was airing directly opposite Community.
Mm-hmm.
But they have confirmed that as a coincidence. They are not intentionally trying to take a shot at The Big Bang Theory, even though they really do enjoy taking shots at that show.
I never thought of that.
Didn't either.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I was wondering, though. I'm like, man, what's Dan Harmon's deal with Bare Naked Ladies? My gosh.
He must have gotten into some conversations with people and realized, like Jeff says here, what is it about this group that just makes everybody so incredibly passionate? And if you know, like he slightly disses them and everybody in the room rounds on him instantly. And not just like slightly, like the quotes here. Troy, the B&L are triple platinum. Are you?
Ouch.
Annie, maybe B&L has 2 Billboard awards to your 0. And then Britta, best quote, maybe we all need some space to pull the knife out of the back of one of the most celebrated Canadian alt-rock bands of the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
They're not wrong.
No, no. It's that whole interchange, just one BNL defense quote would have been kind of mildly amusing. The fact that they just kept going with it, that really made it funny. I like that. And it just gets more and more elaborate. Like, this is, they all study bare naked ladies for some reason. But it's a weird, it's still a very contrived fight. It's not, it's barely a fight. It's,
oh, sure.
Yeah.
Jeff's saying we're fighting now. It's like, okay, what? All right.
Okay, it's not just me that thought that was really strange.
It's very strange.
We're fighting now and then storm off.
That's what my 7-year-old does when he gets upset. He gets his face and he just stomps out of the room. I'm like, I wish I could do that these days. I have to be an adult and stay in the room with the people I'm fighting with. Ooh. Yeah, so he leaves the room. Duncan overhears that they're fighting, invites himself over to Jeff's to watch soccer. Chang overhears that. So we have a lot of eavesdroppers going on here. And so we get to Jeff's apartment. I think we've seen his apartment before. It's kind of sad. It's still a very bare bones apartment, and not just in a, hey, we're a sitcom, we needed to throw together a quick apartment set. But it, like, if you actually look around, a lot of his decorations are on the floor and they're not hung up yet.
Yeah.
It's like he just kind of moved in and gave up.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. It's only, you can see just little parts out of the sides of the screens. I don't think they wanted to make a big deal out of it, but I thought maybe they're deliberately going for, you know, Jeff hasn't really made this his home. It's just where his stuff is.
Yeah.
And, you know, in any case, yeah. So I like that we get Duncan back. We get Duncan as the non-teacher role, just the sort of occasionally associate with Jeff, chummy friend. I like that kind of Duncan. Like, he's got some witty quotes, and, you know, he's not exactly the Jeff's best friend in the entire world, but Jeff does kind of tolerate him. So they're cool hanging out together.
I like that Duncan too, but I'll be honest, I really, really don't enjoy the plot of Duncan falling off the wagon. That's not fun to me at all. And I'm sure there are plenty of people out there who just think I should lighten up, but just, it just bums me out. I don't think it's funny. I don't think it's interesting. It's just, it just kind of bums me out. I feel the same way about Pathetic Chang this season. You know, Ken Jeong is a really funny guy, but just his plot is to sit there and be as sad and pathetic as possible.
Such a bummer.
Episodes.
And then we've got Pierce over here ODing. So all around.
The hell?
Somebody's going through issues and they're working it out. Speaking of Chang, he does show up. He's wearing the right colors. Apparently, according to the notes that were on Amazon, both Manchester United and Liverpool have the same exact colors. They're red and white. So maybe that was a clever little joke.
I love
for
that.
People who actually do know what these are. Because I wouldn't have ever got that. I barely know that those are.
I wouldn't have gotten that either.
So I like how they're talking about it, and Chang's like, I can hear you guys. And so now Jeff's gone from, he was going to enjoy the night by himself. Now he's got Duncan and Chang. Chang comes in and naturally immediately smashes Jeff's light with nunchucks. It's so random, but I love it.
I love that moment.
Yeah. And you can just see Jeff like immediately regretting opening the door. But yeah. Then Chang. Chang owes Duncan a pizza or something like that.
Starburst owes Chang a pizza.
Somebody's going to get a pizza. And so Chang calls Starburns to get a pizza. And by the way, did you notice this pizza Starburns brings over?
It's a sandwich,
isn't it?
It's the tiniest little round
sandwich
bag thing. Just tosses it.
Yeah. That's the pizza. What is that, a Lunchables pizza?
I thought, it's going to be some sort of like Hot Pocket throw in a microwave kind of pizza. But it's small. Like, that great, great move on the props department there with the smallest pizza ever. So for Duncan coming in, gets Chang to come in. Chang invites Starburn. Starburn invites everybody using the phrase "wingding at wingers," which is great, and we should be using that more often. But, you know, so everybody just ditches the lame Valentine's Day party at the school and just goes to this random guy's apartment. Everybody brings beer, by the way.
Yep.
So I think Jeff's kind of okay with that. But yeah, they come in. The party is undergoing. And this is something I kind of like. Jeff, if this was a normal sitcom and Jeff was supposed to be the super uptight guy, the comedy would be watching him as a pressure cooker, where he's going to get more and more upset as more and more ridiculous things happen all around him. And then finally he would blow his top. And sort of this plays out like that, but it also doesn't, because we see that he actually kind of really enjoys this.
Mm-hmm.
He lightens up. He's drinking beers. He's getting to know everybody's names. He's not really visibly super upset until Chang really starts to push his luck. So I thought that was, I like that. I like seeing Jeff kind of realize, you know, yeah, he does need friends. I mean, isn't that part of his subplot? And that's what I really like Duncan pulling out his psych hat and saying, you know, when Jeff's saying, like, look at all these people who need me. And Duncan says, well, you're in your second year. At this point, you either need to stop running away or admit that you kind of like it here. This is kind of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I'm misquoting that all over the place, but I thought that's a good little Jeff moment. Like he wasn't the jerk. He wasn't, I think he was far more tolerant of all the buffoonery that was happening abruptly to him, especially by Chang, because Heather, I'm sorry, Chang is your department. You want to talk about Chang?
I don't really. I think I've talked before about how sad I am about what happens to Chang. Like,
so this answers a question we've had for a while, and I forgot about it until we got to this episode. Oh. We have asked the question, what happened to Senora Chang?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And now we know.
Yeah, she left him.
She kicks him out. Yep. She this found out about Shirley's baby, and that was the last straw. And so, you know, off screen, of course, you know, we're taking Chang at his word, but, you know, why not? Yeah. So I had reservations in the past. I thought the screenwriters just completely forgot that little subplot. But, you know, no, I'm glad that they threw that line in. Not that I want Chang to be miserable, but.
But it ties up a loose end.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll appreciate that. I love. So we have people come. We'll stick with Chang for a minute. So, yeah, Chang is kind of using the party as a smoke screen to not so subtly move in with Jeff because he's now homeless. So we have Chang showing up, Chang putting all his underwear, like full load of laundry, in Jeff's dishwasher.
Yeah.
Use Jeff's toothbrush and bathrobe, and then put four hermit crabs, one of which is named Jeff, in the sink. So yeah, I didn't see Chang bring all of that stuff in.
But he didn't want you to see him bring it all in.
He's just that good. Yeah. So he keeps kind of presuming more and more that Jeff will just kind of let him stay. And he's not entirely wrong here. Like, I think he just pushes too hard too fast. But when Jeff at the end of the episode hears, you know, like, dumps some trash and hears that Chang's down there in the trash disposal, he was down and gets Chang and carries him up like a baby. Love that little moment.
Yeah.
Ken Jeong, he looks so small in Jeff's arms.
He does.
And he puts him on the couch, tucks him in. Yeah, you can stay here. Hey, dude, big Jeff Winger moment. Like, this is a selfish guy who a season ago would never have done.
Yeah, this. No way.
And
excuse me.
Maybe he's not being the most gracious host, but then again, Chang's not really being the most gracious house guest either. So
no,
the two forces cancel each other out.
Yeah, I'm interested to see as the seasons progress, because we know that, you know, Jeff's relationship to Greendale changes as the show goes on. But Duncan does point out the idea of character development. And I'm curious, you know, like exactly what you just said, that he would not have done this half a season ago. But if we start to drop some of the some of the threads of how much Jeff hates Greendale in the coming episode. Does he turn on a dime eventually, or is it actually going to be something that progresses? Because I would love to find out that it actually is something that happens slowly over time, like a real human being. I'll have to watch.
Yeah, wasn't like the first or second episode of the season with the lawyers kind of talking about how Greendale infected him?
Right.
It made him uncool, and he was kind of fighting back against that, but that's kind of been the struggle with, you know, between him and his previous life and this new one. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of liked it. I thought, yeah, Chang would have driven me crazy if he did that sort of thing to me. But, you know, he's truly desperate. And Chang, in his own way, just does not know how to ask somebody point blank for their help. So he has to connive and be as weird as possible. Because that's just what Chang does.
That's Chang.
And at the party also, we get some nice little side characters. Leonard shows up. Where are the white women at? He says.
Blazing Saddles.
Oh, Leonard.
I wonder if the writers just think, what is the craziest thing we could put inside this very old man's mouth? And they have fun with it.
A Blazing Saddles reference. It's good.
Yeah.
Good.
It is. And we meet debut character here, Magnitude.
Pop, pop.
Pop, pop.
Where he says, actually, his first words are yo, 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 yep. Pop, pop.
Yo, yo, yo.
I'm like, dude, pop. You don't say yo, yo, yo. You only say pop, pop. I don't know. He probably says some other things in the show, but I love the fact that they took a character this is a sitcom thing, right? Even The Simpsons were making fun of that with Poochie the dog. Like, you know, you got this character that just says a catchphrase and that's all they are.
Yeah.
That's all Magnitude is. He's the life of the party that shows up, and you know it's a party if he's there, and he just raises his hands and goes pop, 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 pop. And everybody loves it. And we do.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
And the actor sells it so well, and I'm glad that they kept on bringing him back and finding new things to do with a guy who literally just says two words, and they're the same word. But it's a fun introduction, just this guy jumping into the room and yo, 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 pop, pop. And then on the way out, I don't know if that was part of the joke that as Jeff's saying goodbye to everybody, he's coming up with this list of like ridiculous names, you know, Mighty D, Glisten, Swizzle, C-Dubs. So Magnitude is just part of it. Yeah. It's just part of the pop party crowd. So
as far as you know, do we ever hear any of those other names ever again? That's why I wanted to capture them, and I totally blanked.
I don't think so. I think they were just having fun naming characters. Mm-hmm. It's their party name, Al. We should all be so lucky to have a party name.
But mine is Carlos Danger.
Awesome.
That is pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah. Heather, do you have one?
Definitely don't. I'm not cool enough to party.
I've never been to a party.
Yeah.
No. Jeff never invited me to this. Wingding at Wingers. I'll be there next time. I like the Jeff line where he says, do huzzled masses mistake me for the Statue of Liberty? I mean, he does. There is like a codependency. He really likes to, even though he doesn't want to admit it, he loves people hanging on his every word and needing him and wanting him as much as he pretends to not want it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a growing up thing too. Like, you know, parents getting married, having friends, it's a double-edged sword. Cause sometimes, oh man, these people are always needing something from me, but it's still really cool too, to have people need stuff or want stuff, or you can go and help them and having that opportunity. So yeah, that's pretty much the episode. And other than the closing credits where Abed's tasting messages on Candy Hearts, but I think we could probably skip that unless you guys have deep insight into that.
No deep insight.
Yeah.
No deep insight there, but we should close Jeff's plot with his voicemail to the rest of the group.
Okay, please do.
Well, I didn't write it down. I just thought that it was a really nice moment. He had a voicemail to the group.
That's a nice voicemail.
I thought you prepared a statement.
Six pages long there, mm-hmm. Al. Oddly supportive in some paragraphs.
Many.
No, I am not that prepared, but I did think it was a nice way to kind of tie that all back up and to make that to go on with the Valentine's Day theme. I liked it a lot.
That they're family. He tells them, "I love you."
Yeah, I like it too.
Tells Pierce to get some help. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's give our final thoughts on the episode and also a grade to go with it. I know you're asking yourself, we maybe should have addressed this at the beginning of the show. Where's Thomas? Have you guys sidelined him like this episode sidelined Shirley? Mm-hmm. No. He started a new job. He moved across the continent and we're figuring out a better day to record with him. So hopefully he'll be back here with us next time. So thank you for sticking with us, and no Australian accents were harmed in the making of this episode.
We miss you, Tom.
But they will be next time. Yeah. All right, Al, why don't you start us off on your final thoughts and your rating?
You know, I'm really torn on what to grade this episode, because I feel like I've been fairly harsh on it, and I feel like the episode deserves that. But at the same time, I think Britta and her lesbian friend is a really funny, memorable plot line. And I think there's a lot of good stuff in the Jeff plot line, even though I don't like Pathetic Chang and I don't like Drunk Duncan. And the Troy and Abed thing is adorable. But there are so many issues with this that I just pieces of that don't hold up. The Pierce thing is just... It's not fun or interesting. It's just a little depressing. There's no Shirley almost at all. I actually kind of wonder if they could not have taken Paige's friend and turned her into Shirley, given her something to do. So that all really drags it down for me. And
I thought maybe Shirley could have been the one approaching Pierce at the dance to confront him.
Yes.
Yeah, that would have been perfect.
That would have at least...
Sure. Mm-hmm. It's shocking to me that in a cast that really only has six people, seven with Chang and eight with the Dean, I guess, but there's still a small pool of people and you can't find more for all of them to do.
And she's so talented. It's not like she's a bad actress. I really don't understand.
Well, here you go. Valentine's Day. She just got back together with her ex.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was... That was what I said in my plot. Like, she is the one with the relationship baby daddy drama thing this season. Mm-hmm. She's all about the relationships. And she had nothing. And that just boggles my mind. Unless, you know, Yvette Nicole Brown was, like, out visiting family or something.
Yeah, that's possible.
True.
So, the stuff I really love, I want to give it, like, a B. But so much of it, you know, and that stuff is so memorable, I don't feel like it drags down to like a D, so I guess I'm going to go with C. But I kind of want to put it up to a C+, because the stuff that I really like. Even though we don't tend to do the plus thing. I'm doing it anyway. I'm giving myself a C+. I've had two pluses this season. I'm going to give myself one more, and that's it. And then I'm cutting myself off.
Justin, I've never been allowed a plus. What is this? What is up with this? Why do Thomas and Al?
In rare occasions where you need to differentiate and have a extra bit of gradient, you know, fine gradation, you can do this. A plus or minus.
Word salad.
So everyone gets three. Everyone gets three a season.
All right. See, I was just being benevolent. Al is putting a hard number on it. So we have to go with Al's. Well, I'll go next. Okay. So C+ for you. I'll go straight C. And that's just because I don't think there's any other answer I could give for a grade for this episode. It is not a terrible episode. There are some really great parts, some really great lines. And yet it's just a jumble. It's one of those episodes you go, okay, this is a good first draft. Send it back. Maybe chop off some of these subplots. It's four subplots, and that's maybe two more than we actually needed in this episode. And it allowed, you know, they had varying amount of time, so it wasn't like all four of these had equal amount of development. So some of the subplots were really got the short shrift, and some of them just weren't funny, and some of them were great, and I could have watched an entire five more minutes of that subplot. Like, you know, I really would have liked to see a little more of Jeff's party. They looked like they were having fun. I think that they could have done a little bit more with that, but you know, it's still good. It had some good energy to it. Shirley not being in the episode really bugged me. Pierce's thing really bugged me. I like the quotes. I like the Troy and Abed stuff. I think one of the reasons I feel very comfortable just keeping it at SC is there's just so little here that's new. It's not just that they didn't do anything creatively meta. They don't always have to do a high concept episode, and I get that. This would have really been a season one episode in a lot of ways. And, you know, just the fact that it's very low key and the characters are sort of doing college-y stuff and it's sort of around a theme and every, you know, we're still getting together as a community. This is the middle of season two. None of this was needed. We don't need to be told that Britta's high and mighty and look at me, look at me. We don't need to have yet another story of Jeff kind of grudgingly coming around and taking care of people and showing that he does have a heart that's, you know, maybe three sizes too small, but the who's down in Whoville will, you know, get on his good side. We don't need to be told that Chang's crazy. I mean, although that, I think that is a nice little plot development, getting him to move in with Jeff and having a little bit of an odd couple thing for a few episodes to come. The Pierce, yeah, it kind of moves it along, but honestly, they could have completely cut Pierce's subplot, and in the next episode, everybody's called to the hospital. They don't know what went on, and they find out Pierce has been taking the pills and he overdosed. Like that, they could have started the next episode, and that would have been just fine.
Here, here.
Yeah. So it's not like I watch it. I'm entertained. I think it starts on some really funny lines, and you know, I'll never get tired of books. You know, like. Let's not forget, there are some like really good chuckle lines in this, but it's very inconsistent. So I'll stay with C. Heather?
I also am going to give it a C. It does not deserve a D. It isn't terrible. But whenever I think of it, I just think of a lot of missed opportunities. Like good ideas, some good thoughts, but nothing really coming together and gelling right. And that's all I've got to add to what you guys have already stated. Like, it's all there. There's just Shirley missing. Don't like it. Pierce could have just been left out completely, like you said. Nothing would have been missed. I'm like Al. I'm kind of on the side of liking Britta and Paige. Not that we needed, you know, to be reminded, but it is kind of funny. But maybe it could have been better to have been done earlier, because I guess I felt like maybe she was growing a bit past that, so it seems a little weird. But yeah, see here also.
Yeah. All right, we'll find out what Thomas thinks later on. We'll make sure he gets his grade recorded in our spreadsheet there. But in the meanwhile, check us out on Twitter at 101 Rewatching. Let us know what you guys think about the Valentine's Day episode here in season two. We had one in season one, right? There was a Valentine's Day episode.
Was there?
Or I'm thinking of this sex ed one. Maybe that was sort of. I don't know if there was now. Now I'm doubting myself. Shouldn't have opened my mouth. All right. I'll just keep
talking. Yes, there's a Valentine's dance that's Britta drunk dials Jeff and Troy and Pierce wear Jess's. Mm.
Thank you. Okay. All right.
Spreadsheet saves the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, even there, the dances aren't treading any new ground. It's just, yeah, it's a little more of the same. And this show is so precious to me that, like, we only have a set number of episodes that when they kind of sort of just waste one and they don't really do much with it, especially as we get to seasons 4, 5, and 6, when there's fewer episodes per season, I get really irate. I'm like, no, you go back. You should, every episode needs to be a winner. You can't, don't waste it. But oh well, that's all we got to say for today. You guys take care, and whoever you find yourself in a passionate, heavy, fun, friendly taco affair with, you just make sure that they get the same number of tacos that you get, because that's only fair. It's only fair. Take care, guys.
Pop, pop.
Pop, pop.